Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're down here in the rugby dungeon, ready to dissect another big week in the rugby world. I'm Tim. Right in front of me, sockless and shoeless, is JB.
Yeah, because if we put the live stream up and I'm barefoot, people go insane. They just lose their mind.
I know, it's JB's looking at a screen which has got the shot of the video that we're recording currently, and his feet are just out of picture.
Yeah, literally, I've got about an inch to play with. That's what she said. Whey! That's boys.
lads. And there is Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Hello. Why the British and Irish Lions stash today? Any particular reason for that?
Not really. I just kind of was flicking through my rugby jersey collection and thought, I've not worn that for a while.
How do you keep your rugby jersey collection? Are they all kept together, or do you keep rugby shirts with T-shirts?
No, they're kept together. They're separate. They're in the back bedroom at the moment. So they've got their own separate wardrobe right now.
Oh, do you remember that, JB, when you used your spare bedrooms for your own other clothes?
Well, I've got a spare flat now, so I'm actually okay on this front. But yes, I have.
This is where all your rugby jerseys are, JB, around us.
There's quite a few of my rugby jerseys in the rugby dungeon as well.
Some team rugby jerseys, yeah. Aren't we?
Yes. Well, you can find us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, and hopefully you can go watch exactly what we're recording right now on YouTube as well.
Yes.
If the video works correctly, then...
And it will, of course.
And it will. You'll be able to see as well as hear. So just subscribe everywhere you can. And thank you very much for listening. We've got a big weekend of rugby to talk about domestically and internationally. And we're waking up in a new world where New Zealand rugby union players are human.
Wow. Well, hang on. Because it means something else as well.
What?
The JB Cup has a new holder.
I can only imagine this was the first thing on Kieran Reid's mind.
Oh, when they were devastated
when they lost that game.
Well, yeah, because they had to hand it over to who? Do you know?
I don't know. Because
Wales.
Anyone know?
Wales have got the longest undefeated streak of a Tier 1 15s nation.
Men's. I suspect there's some women's teams that have got longer records than Wales. Current unbeaten run, which is how many games?
Five,
okay.
Congratulations, Wales, I guess, kind of.
This is an amazing achievement for them. They've worked so hard on the Warren Gatland. You think about what they've done there. They've won Six Nations, they've got, I think, two Grand Slams under him, World Cup semi, but the JB Cup. That's something, isn't it? That's something.
So how is the JB Cup being transported from New Zealand to Wales?
Fighter plane.
Fighter plane.
Well,
a few mid-air refueling stops there.
Good knowledge, Tim. Yes, yeah. It would actually be in-flight refueling.
Because multiple in-flight refuels, I would imagine.
Yeah. So that's exactly what will happen.
Can I just suggest on a very technical thing? You pull the fader down now, so we don't get any buzz.
I've done it.
Oh, you've done it already. Done it. Look at this. Wow.
Amazing.
So, yes, New Zealand have been beaten. A couple of facts about that, which I'm wondering if... In fact, I should give Phil an opportunity. There are some quite interesting facts about this win. I'm wondering if you know them, Phil.
So, it depends what you're talking about. If you're talking about the game stats...
Not the game stats.
Okay. The facts, other than the JB Cup changing hands.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
Okay, well, how about the fact that the 36 points scored by South Africa were the most ever given up by the All Blacks on New Zealand soil?
Wow.
Wow!
In any match since 1904.
Wow.
That's amazing. That's genuinely amazing.
Yeah. It was the eighth time that they've lost at home since 1904, I believe, in the last 100 years. There's been 113 matches, 104 wins, one draw, and eight defeats after that. So this is a rare collector's item. The other people that have beaten them before, the British and Irish Lions once,
yep,
last year.
Yeah.
France once. I think that was Maxime Médard. Seems to be having an intercept try. That seems to
Maxime
ring a bell.
Maxime Médard.
So that'll be at some point in the last 10 years, yeah, or so.
England once. That was before the 2000.
I remember that game like it was yesterday.
Yeah, England got, were down to 13 men, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
With two yellow cards.
And they basically walked New Zealand in a mall from the halfway line. That was a brilliant win. That was such a dominant win.
Yeah, and so important going into a World Cup. Yeah. Australia have beaten them twice. They play them a lot, so... You would probably expect them. And South Africa now have three wins. The only side to have chalked up three wins in New Zealand.
Good.
Wow.
And yet still, one of the biggest talking points coming out of it is, do New Zealand need an absolutely cast-iron 85% goal kicker?
But yes. I mean, everyone does. Not just New Zealand. There again, it's all about opportunity cost, isn't it? I mean, what would you miss out on if you didn't? If you did have that kicker, and that's, Bowden Barrett.
Mm. Yeah. So there's a couple of questions there. One, I think you've got to have Bowden Barrett in your team.
Mm.
Absolutely.
So, can't they find a Kenny Logan somewhere?
Well, they've got Geordie Barrett, who can kick sticks. He was playing 15 at the time. They've also got someone like D-Mac, who's on the bench, but who can kick sticks.
And Bowden Barrett quite often can kick sticks.
He seems to have these games, though. Mm. He'll often get... He'll often get 80 or 90% in a single game, but he'll often get 33% in this game. He's had games...
33% was his kicking percentage.
Yes. He's had games where he's had a 0% and had, like, 5 or 6 shots at goal.
Wow. Well. I mean, that's, like... That's seriously, like, level 8 percentages.
There's normally
Top Age have played against fly halves with better kicking percentages than that.
It's like level 8 percentages if your tight head prop is kicking.
Yeah, well, it always makes me laugh. In Top Age, we have like, I don't know, 5 guys who are practicing kicking all the time, and I always think it's important to have an army of mediocre kickers to fall back on.
Yeah, so it's a concern. I actually think New Zealand are that good, and this game was such an anomaly that I don't think it's a major concern going into the World Cup. And I actually think, I said to JB when I first arrived, I think this loss actually puts New Zealand in a stronger position to win the World Cup.
Oh, that's not what I want to hear after that.
Well, I tell you what.
I think you might be right.
I think they will learn. So there's lots of things to learn. One is the importance of goal kicking, which they may or may not do anything about. Second, just that final 5 minutes where they've got all of the territory, all the possession, they had multiple opportunities to attempt to drop goal. And it was... One half of me wants to say it was arrogance. The other half of me... Do you remember back to the 2015 World Cup? And Chris Robshaw...
Don't remind me.
Chris Robshaw, in the Wales game, had the shot for three or go for the corner, and he went for the corner. And the phrase I used at the time was, it was like he was playing on tilt, which is a poker phrase where you've had a particularly bad beat, you should have won a hand.
Chase your losses.
And your decision-making is affected.
Yeah.
Now, New Zealand, looking at this game, and the statistics are unbelievably one-sided in New Zealand's favour, all of the statistics, and yet they found themselves down. And so it was almost like their decision-making was on tilt, and in a normal game, they would have taken the three, and in this game, they didn't.
Mm.
And I think this wake-up call will correct that if they ever find themselves in similar positions in future.
I also think there's one other thing that should temper this slightly. They were on home soil, and this doesn't happen very often. But New Zealand in week one picked pretty much a full-strength team. Mm. Week two, they picked a second-string team. And then in this round, they picked kind of a hybrid.
Yeah.
So they will get better as well.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, when you say, do you need a kicker? we are talking about a team who's coming off the back of two World Cups has won every rugby championship that I can remember. I mean, when is
Australia did win one about 2 years ago.
Did they?
Yeah.
And I need to have a look at when that happened.
When they all finished pretty much level on points.
So, okay, let me rephrase that. Won nearly every rugby championship since that I can remember, okay? If they lose one game every 4 years at home to South Africa, it's fine.
Yeah,
you know, just carry on playing without a kicker. Mm. If the only two teams that can beat you are a combination of the best of the four home nations, right? And by the way, that was only a draw, and one game at South Africa, it's not a big deal, is it?
I want to jump a little tangent because I think it relates to what Phil just talked about at the end there. It's something I was thinking I was going to bring up later if we talked about the Premiership, but let's talk about it more broadly because I've noticed this over the last few weeks now, last couple of weeks. Teams making really poor decisions at the death in games over corner or posts. And I'm quite amazed that at international level, at professional top domestic league level, these mistakes are being made. So here's an example. In the Wasps versus Leicester game, which was earlier today as we record this, Wasps were 3 points up with a couple of minutes left. Deep in Leicester's territory, had a penalty, opted to kick at sticks, putting them 6 points ahead, which meant Leicester still had the losing bonus point, but after the kickoff, gained a net gain of 80 or 90 metres.
Yeah.
Had Wasps dropped the ball on the kickoff,
Or Leicester win it back
from a kickoff,
which is not unheard of,
you've given them a massive amount of territory and they still only need 7 points to win the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in that situation, I was scratching my head thinking...
Yeah, but also they need to convert. I think I would go for the points because they need to convert the try, don't they?
Well, with 2 minutes left on the field, my thinking would be if I was Joe Launchbury, I'd have said, kick it into the corner, maul it. Best case scenario, we score a try and we take a bonus point off them. Worst case scenario, they've got to go 100 metres.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's tough to do when we have the ball and there's only 90 seconds left. So, before we go on to that. So,
Didn't you lose a cup final doing this?
No.
I'm sure you did. Didn't you lose a Booster Cup final or something?
I don't want to talk about those. I never got to play at Twickenham. Lost in three semi-finals.
Was it the semi-final you lost?
No, it was a County Cup. There was a County Cup final where we kicked the ball into touch from a penalty and the referee said we had to take the line out. As well as the penalty, and our kicker thought he was kicking it dead to end the game, and kicked it backwards towards our try line. So
no.
There ended up being a line out right near our line.
I'll come back. I'm sure you're telling me that you had a choice between a kick to the corner to drive it and run down the clock, or kick at sticks. You kicked at sticks, and then they scored on the last play.
Oh no, that has happened in a bit. It was a league match, but it got us. Yes, it got us a really horrible quarter final, and we ended up losing. Yes, that did happen. But last week, Sale v Worcester. Sale were 6 points up with 2 minutes to go, deep in Worcester's half. Had a penalty, kicked for the corner.
Yeah, when
they only had two tries, so they were never going to get a try bonus point.
Yeah,
and
the point would have prevented Worcester from getting the three.
The 3 points would have meant that they went nine up and took a bonus point away from Worcester and meant that they had to score twice to possibly lose. And so I was scratching my head last week going, why did Sale kick for the corner?
That's a good question.
There was another interesting one in the Worcester game when Worcester...
The one this weekend.
The one this week against Newcastle, Worcester 3 points down, less than 60 seconds left on the clock. They get a penalty from a similar position to where Pennell had already slotted one. It was a difficult kick, but he'd already slotted one from a similar distance, actually further out, but slightly more central. So the 3 points would have got them the draw, guaranteed two, but they went for the corner. And
That was a Chris Robshaw-esque call.
They went for the corner. Now, admittedly, it was the difference between one league point and two league points because it would have been a draw if they took the penalty. But they didn't get anywhere near the corner flag. In fact, they were at least 5 metres away from the 22, outside the 22.
Wow.
Won the line out, tried to hit up the centre who dropped the ball, and it was game over.
Yeah.
But you're right, these decisions...
And this is professional elite level. I mean, am I right in saying those are obvious calls in the case of Wasp? Well, no, the Wasp one is a bit more debatable, but Sale last week...
Sale seemed...
Kick for stick, go 9 points clear.
Yeah, Sale seemed unusual. And Worcester, to me, I think it was worth... Given in all that time, in the whole other previous 79 minutes, they'd only come close to scoring... Well, they scored two tries. Mm. One of them was when... I can't remember who it was now. When Newcastle had a man in the bin.
It's just that it relates to what you're talking about with New Zealand, but it's interesting that in the heat of battle, at tense moments, the sort of cool head, calm decision making, logic can get lost.
It can go right. And I can understand the drop goal one more than the penalty one. Yeah. Because the penalty one, you've got time to think. Yeah. A drop goal has got to be a spur-of-the-moment reaction. Yeah. But surprising. Just on the New Zealand, so I mentioned the stats before, and I won't go into much detail, but the stats are astonishing in terms of... So New Zealand had nearly 80% territory and 75% possession, which doesn't always correlate to a win. But when you combine it with they ran more than... twice the number of metres with ball in hand. They beat three times the number of defenders, had more, twice the number of clean breaks. They only made 49 tackles.
Wow.
Compared to 196 tackles for South Africa. And possibly the most startling is New Zealand only gave away three penalties, which is astonishing at any level of international rugby. And to lose, it really is quite remarkable.
Wow.
The three penalties is just about the most staggering of all.
It really is.
And to lose.
Joe Fallon has tweeted us on the New Zealand result at Rugby Podcast. He basically says, it's impossible to unsmug a Kiwi. his evidence for which is, he says, Sean Fitzpatrick, when New Zealand win... the guys were immense. When New Zealand lose, it's great for world rugby, a.k.a. one of you pitiful nations finally managed to beat us once.
Yeah, it's so patronising. Oh, it's great for the game
that someone can compete with us just once.
If I was a nation of, 3-4 million people and was so dominant, I'd be smug.
You can understand it. It is largely justified there, the confidence that... the New Zealand players and public have in their team. But they made some mistakes. They made some key mistakes at key times. You look at the LaRue try and the Colby try, the kind of two intercept tries. Key times where it was a complete momentum shift from one side to the other. And at the time of the games as well. Because after 16 minutes, when New Zealand are 2-0 up and looking very, very comfortable, you think... This will be 50 or 60 nil.
Mm. Well, that'll teach me, because I actually missed the whole game. I thought, I've seen this game pan out so many times.
First half, they'll keep it tight. Second half, New Zealand will dominate. Yeah.
I'll go out for breakfast. I'm watching Twitter thinking, it'll turn soon. It'll turn soon. And it never turned.
Yeah.
Devastated.
And fair play to South Africa, because they took their chances very well. Deante, the winger, who took his two tries very, very well, marks and the forward power. But the overwhelming thing from New Zealand was the heroic, absolutely heroic defence, time after time after time again.
So one other thing it's made far more pertinent is these three little slips here. These are your names for the New England manager for the Six Nations, because that's what's going to happen. Because... It must be a worry for English fans now, knowing that South Africa are probably going to be pretty tasty. And also knowing you've got to play New Zealand off the back of that. I mean, the only bright spot on this is you're also going to play Australia, who are a mess.
Yeah, well, before we focus on that, we should again say fair play Argentina, because we thought this rugby championship was just going to be a procession of home wins, other than New Zealand, who would win home and away.
Yeah.
And Argentina get a win on the road.
Is that the first win on Australian soil?
Yeah.
Hmm. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
That is very cool.
So it was their first win in the Rugby Championship. I think it was their first win in 35 years, they were saying in commentary during the game.
That's amazing. I can never make up my mind on Argentina. Like, was it too soon for them to join the Rugby Championship? And they do continually get hammered, but occasionally they pull out a victory.
What was the name of the right winger?
Margaret Thatcher.
Delgi, yeah. His try and slide into his teammates who were warming up behind the try line was a thing of beauty. He, in one motion, put the ball down, slid along the floor, and ended up sliding and hugging his teammate who was warming up.
One of the best try celebrations I've seen is the dual dive. Who on earth did it? Hugard.
When a dual dive,
yeah. So his teammate is diving in to score a try,
and he also dived without the ball.
I have no idea why he did it.
He's very flash, isn't he?
He's so flash.
I loved this game. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Partly because of the arm wrestle between the two. Partly because of the kind of brilliant tries by both teams. Like the Folau try. Have you seen the Folau's try?
No.
Absolutely phenomenal.
It is like worldy.
Like really?
Men against boys.
It looks like the big kid who's hit puberty first playing under 14s against a load of prepubescent kids.
Just changing direction at full pace, hitting arms and just going through them like they're
not there. It's
unreal. The Delgi try was phenomenal. But the finish, and it's so give all that credit to Folau for his phenomenal try. He messed up big time. He cost Australia that game by thinking he could do it all and coming against the absolute man mountain who tracked 40 metres, 80th minute, he's tracked 40 metres across across pitch.
You just watched the Folau try. It's crazy good, isn't it?
Is it the one where he bursts through the middle?
Yeah. Punches through the middle, then goes around the outside.
Goodness me. That's quite something. That is amazing, actually, isn't it?
But Folau, it's that little step.
Yeah, Folau in the last minute, Jay. Honestly, it's on the other side of the ball. He was something else as well.
Yeah, and it was Lavanini who's tracked right the way across the pitch. He's played 80 minutes. He's put in God knows how many hits and carries, and he absolutely as Folau steps back inside. Yeah. It was a winger and a prop.
Yeah.
He steps through them. And gets absolutely flattened by Lavanini.
Lavanini does a job.
Phenomenal hit. Phenomenal bit of defensive tracking from a second row. It's superb.
Yeah, I need to post some more things about God. Just watching that try again. I mean, he's obviously got someone on his side.
But if you do that and you lose the game, it's not worth it.
Oh, yeah, good point. Mind you,
God can't love him that much.
Well, it depends what you want. I mean, if you just want really cool try highlights. If that's what you're aiming for.
So in 5 years' time, everyone will have forgotten about him blowing that game, but everyone will still be watching that try.
Well, I tell you what, I used to have a coach called Kevin O'Brien. Did you get coached by Kevin?
I didn't get coached by him, but I know the guy, yeah.
Right, so Kevin O'Brien used to, you think you might have encountered the guy.
Yeah, I know.
And he used to be coach at Broughton Park, and he had an Ireland cap, hell of a player. His sons are brilliant players. Good coach, nice guy. But on his one Ireland cap, he has this absolute horror underneath the high ball. I mean, an absolute shocker, which leads to an England try. And you say that no one will ever remember, Israel Folau messing up. That's all that people remember of Kevin O'Brien's entire international career is that one missed catch. Devastating. Oh, and the worst still.
It's like there are a lot of people around the world that's all they'll remember of Matthew Tate is getting smacked. Probably most Welshmen.
Yeah,
Tate, he's the guy that Gavin Henson absolutely annihilated.
I mean, fast forward 10 years and Matthew Tate's been, awarded with various prizes for clearing landmines in third world countries, and they will still remember Gavin Henson annihilating.
Putting him under his arm and just like carrying him marching along back.
That's the guy that cured cancer, right? No, the Gavin Henson guy. No matter what he does, it's over for him.
It's so true.
And the worst part for Kevin O'Brien was ESPN. Do you remember ESPN Classics?
I love those. Why don't they keep doing those? I love those.
I think they've ran out of bandwidth on TV or something.
Always on a Tuesday afternoon about 2:30 p.m.
Well, his game, right? Of all the games they could pick, all the hundreds of Ireland games, his game was on continual rotation.
But I mean, you have to have got there to have
exactly
to have made
right,
that
mate. Exactly right. So there you go.
Yeah,
there we are.
So
two away wins.
Yes. Now, rather than talking about a game in entirety, I want to talk about one incident, which has been the people on Twitter have been the one that's caused the most discussion when I've
on Twitter. Are you sure?
Yeah.
What?
A divisive decision causing outrage on Twitter. Actually, I'd say there's a lot of people arguing equally passionately on both sides, which maybe highlights why this is so difficult an area to adjudicate. So let's talk about the red card given to Will Spencer playing for Leicester Tigers.
I liked it. I'll tell you why I liked it. I liked it because as soon as I saw the incident, I knew what the decision was. And I think that's how it should be.
So now, you like it for consistency?
Correct. Now, I would like to also watch it and say, I know what the outcome is going to be, and the outcome isn't a red card. But I like the fact that I can now watch a game of rugby, and there's no ambiguity to what the outcome... I mean, I was gutted that he went. Absolutely gutted. He was playing well, Leicester were playing well, it was turning into a good old scrap. And when he left the field, it didn't ruin the game, but it didn't help it.
But yeah, it definitely did not ruin the game. It was 3-2 to Wasps before the red card. Yep. It was 2-1 to Leicester after the red card.
From a neutral perspective, it didn't ruin the game. Leicester Tigers fans
Leicester might say that, but they scored more tries than Wasps with fewer players, and they scored fewer tries than Wasps.
10
minutes
of that second half was 14-14 as well.
I thought it was good officiating, like in the technical sense, which is, here's the incident. I could see straight from the first second that he got smashed in the face by a shoulder. It's a red card.
Yeah.
What do you think, Phil?
It was contact with the head, shoulder, and I'm slightly curious to say to what would have happened if
Tommy Taylor
still had the ball, because the ball had gone and it was high shot and it was a shoulder to the head. So that for me is a red card.
Yeah.
If he's still got the ball, does it change it?
Nope.
Maybe not.
It wasn't a late hit. Well, the pass had gone, but he was committed already.
It was very different
to the Dan Cole one, which should have been a yellow card, where the ball had gone and...
I could feel the pain in Ben Kay's voice. He's like, but there's a bend in the knees and there's an arch in the back and whatever it was, right? The implication being that Will Spencer would try to go low. And I think he had, but you're not going to get as low as a guy who's smaller than you. So, it is what it is. It was good officiating.
So I'm a let the voice play advocate.
Yeah.
I'm a...
Oh!
I won't forget about Cornerstone.
Okay. Our Cornerstone alarm.
We've got a pin in it.
We've got to make some money.
We want to pay for all this equipment that is making us melt currently with all the electricity in this room at the same time. So I'm a let the boys play advocate. I'm not as far as someone who just repeats ad nauseum, the game's gone soft. The game has changed, however. And I understand the reason for the game changing. I don't particularly like it. As a player, I knew what I signed up for, even from a young age. I knew what playing rugby meant. I knew the physicality that it brought. And I knew that, there'd be black eyes and broken fingers and all of that. That's what I sign up for. So as long as the game's played with a certain honesty of spirit and intent, then I would let the boys play a little bit more than currently. However, I understand where we're at. And I think by the letter of the law, I understand why a red card was given. My issue with this whole area is, and I think this was another example of it, I can remember towards the end of last season, I was there, I was watching a game, and it might have even been... No, it was Faf de Klerk playing against England in the summer. You go back and watch. Mm-hmm. He absolutely clocks an England forward with the shoulder in the head. And nothing happens. And you get a massive guy, 6'8", Will Spencer.
19 stone.
Who clocks someone high, knocks them back, knocks them over. And they always get penalised. But it's not...
Because the damage they do.
I'm all with you for consistency. And actually, that's a really great way of putting at it. You like the fact that when you look at that, you say, I get it, that's a red before the red card comes out. You're not surprised when a red card comes out. However, that will happen 10 times a game, which I have an issue with. And when it happens, and it's a little player, a smaller player, on a bigger player, it will never get given a red.
Because part of the equation is force, right? and big men create more force.
That's a crock of...
And I'm not sure that force necessarily should be.
No, I'm not saying... No, I don't think it necessarily should be either. But that is part of the equation. Now, there was an interesting one, wasn't there, a few years back, with a player going forward. It was Harlequins at number 8. Alofa, maybe? No, that's a winger.
Matt Luamanu.
Matt Luamanu, on one of the Exeter... Was it Exeter, one of the Exeter young lads, I think it was.
Yeah, so he comes in to make a tackle. Luamanu is a huge, monstrous, massively powerful man. They collide. Big men create more power. And if part of the equation is force, more men will go.
Well, then part of the equation should not be force.
Yeah. I am with taking the force out of it.
But then, if you take the force out of it...
Then any brush. Yeah. You've got to have some, recognition and understanding. So I think if Faf puts a swinging arm or a shoulder to the head... Even if it doesn't cause some damage.
I think intent has to be.
Well,
Will Spencer didn't intend to clock him in the head.
No, Will Spencer definitely did not intend to hit him in the head because he knows the consequences. If he did intend to, he's an absolute idiot.
Yes,
he did not intend to hit him in the head. And that is one of the most disappointing thing about the way that this is dealt with in the media. That it is repeatedly referred, commentators, Dai Young today, actually used the phrase intent. He said, in explaining the decision, he said, well, he didn't have any intent. But intent is... It frustrates me so much.
But someone actually got off, didn't they? Benjamin Fowle.
It was the Benjamin Fowle incident. Yeah, Benjamin Fowle.
Benjamin Fowle got off because there was no intent.
Well, it was one of the reference points for the World Rugby Independent Inquiry about it, which... adds even more confusion to an already confusing position.
Yeah, well...
But, intention does not come into the laws apart from deliberate knock-on.
Yes, exactly. So, there is a way that we can sort all this stuff out.
Is it your 12-year-old boy?
is it 12-year-old boy? Yeah, so...
Your 12-year-old schoolboy in a shipping container instead of a TMO.
Exactly right. Okay, so I've got multiple ways to sort this out, but number one would be to put an excited 12-year-old boy into a shipping container, right? And then see if he finds the actions of the players entertaining. And if he does, it's play-off.
Let the boys play.
Yeah, because that's what people want to see. The other thing I'd say is every time a player... gets caught in this sort of situation, we send George Smith in. So he can somehow litigate his way out of trouble.
Now, have you read the brief bits of transcript?
No, Phil, I haven't.
So I've not read the official transcript. I can confirm that. I've read a couple of articles on this. It seems like he just used his kind of charisma and a packet of biscuits to get off this, because half of the stuff that he was talking about included... immediately before and immediately after the contact, which is entirely irrelevant to the contact itself.
Yeah.
And presumably, the grandson of one of the judges has now got a signed George Smith shirt.
Do you reckon they were just like, because I don't know who's necessarily on these committees.
It's normally...
Well, Nick Wood was one of them.
Was he?
Yeah. The former Gloucester prop.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and now he's a referee now.
Is he? I thought he was doing...
He was becoming a referee. No, he's a referee. I'm pretty sure.
He's doing something.
Yeah, because he does not look like a... He was refereeing in the sevens, pre-season sevens, I think.
Okay.
I'm going to look this up.
No,
that's never Nick Wood. Oh my God, it's Nick Wood. He's like Nick Wood.
Half Nick Wood.
Half Nick Wood, yeah.
Yeah, well, he's... Yeah.
So it's normally a couple of ex-players and someone with a legal background who also knows about the game.
So I just wonder, yeah, I was just wondering if George Smith is such a massive presence. It's like trying to, it's like trying to put Dan Carter through a disciplinary or something. They're just starstruck. And then apparently he bought a ball with him, did he not?
Yeah.
And he's showing, giving you a demonstration. I mean, he probably didn't even speak about what he did.
No.
That's how bad the money situation is at Twickenham, that you had to take a ball with him.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have a ball here? What? Mind you, how often do you go to a rugby club and you ask, does he want a ball? And there were just no balls.
Ball?
Yeah. Up and down the country.
What do you want a ball for?
Yeah. Up and down the country, this has happened to me. I think he just spoke generically about the breakdown, like a masterclass. And by the end of it, everyone was mesmerised and forgot exactly why they were there.
And so he just filled in the form.
Exactly.
Not guilty.
Not guilty. No time to serve. Off you go.
Deserves £10,000 expenses direct from the RFU.
Yes. Exactly.
So in summary with the Will Spencer thing, we all, to a greater or lesser degree, are okay with the red card. We have reservations about what that means and how that's implemented across the game as a whole. Because you talked about consistency, and I think what Phil was sort of touching on is that there's inherent inconsistency, firstly because every incident is different.
Yeah.
And secondly because things like intent and force are occasionally and not occasionally being taken into account to greater or lesser degrees.
Yeah, and it's spoken about. So that Benjamin Fall incident, I complained repeatedly about it at the time. It does seem to be an anomaly. It seems to be a bit of a one-off with that. But my big frustration is the people that are communicating the game, so the broadcasters, often use the phrase intent, which means that most people on Twitter who probably aren't as well read up on the laws, kind of, they see frustration and they see it as inconsistency, even when consistency is ultimately being applied. I don't think that helps. That does frustrate me.
Agreed. Yeah, well.
But, so, I think we spoke about that for far too long.
Yeah.
Completely ignoring that, there were some very nice bits, some very interesting bits out of this game.
Which game is this?
This is the Wasps-Leicester game.
Hold your thoughts, Tim, make me some money.
Cover our costs.
Sorry, cover our costs.
If you're
buy some shoes for JB.
Yeah.
Firstly, thank you for listening. You've chosen to get to this point in the podcast, and we very much appreciate it. To show we appreciate it, we negotiate amazing deals with partners that we think you'll like. One of them, long-time partner of ours, friend of the pod, Cornerstone. So it's a mail order razor company, and you've been in a supermarket and you've seen the choice between the home brand or one of those other brands, and always a bit expensive. You're not sure what you're going to get because they're in that plastic casing. You have to bring them home, and then it's just all a bit of a much of a muchness. Cornerstone is precision German engineered razors, award-winning razors. We absolutely love them. And what we love particularly, as well as the six razors that you get in your Cornerstone presentation box, is the weighty, heavy aluminium shaft that you can have engraved with your initials that will stand there on the side.
Delightful.
In the bathroom. It is beautiful.
Oh my.
What do you have on yours?
JB. JD. No. Yeah, JB.
Not JD.
No, JDB.
JDB.
John David. More.
Yeah, there you go. So you have it engraved. Perfect present for someone as well. And you could get that, because you listen to us, for just £4. Less than the cost of a beer. Get involved, give it a try with no obligation to continue, but we think you'll want to because Cornerstone are brilliant. What you need to do is go to cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or
Egg10 at checkout. We've not been for a Champagne Friday for God knows how how long now. You're just so busy, Phil.
It's been a while.
God. Anyway.
So, back to the game.
Yes.
The positives out of the game.
Well, okay. The positives, very, very briefly. Manu. First 20 in particular, awesome.
And then they didn't use him as much, but he was kind of, Wasp were man-marking him or double man-marking him for the rest of the game.
That's 380 minutes.
Which then creates... Yeah,
it's great though.
380 minutes
is what he needs.
First 20 minutes, great. And then George Ford was smart enough to not use him as a decoy and not use him because he attracts so many players to him.
George Ford, right. I'm glad, because that's number two. George Ford is looking spectacular.
He has really upped his game.
Whatever was happening in previous administrations there, it's just criminal. It's absolutely criminal. He's so good. I can't believe he was so bad for a year. I mean, he wasn't even that bad, truth be told. He just wasn't up to his standards.
Well, hold on. Stop worrying about Matt O'Connor. You should worry about poor Phil, who's had him for 2 years in fantasy rugby with moderate production.
He was generally good, but nothing, absolutely nothing even close to the levels he's achieved the last 2 years.
Is he in year three at Leicester now? Is it year two?
Year three.
Uh-oh, he's in the Ben Darwin zone.
He is hitting the Ben Darwin zone.
Yeah, there we go.
So, yeah, so Phil's had decent production out of him, but nothing like the 50-point hauls that George Ford is currently getting in fantasy rugby draft, which only hints at how well he is playing more generally. And I feel the need to, and I'm glad you're beating this drum, and you're beating this drum, Phil, and I'm beating this drum, because I think if you just, again, listen to Twitter, you would think that the shoe-in and the only choice for Eddie Jones at fly half is Danny Cipriani. And as well as he's playing, I'm not having this lack of conversation about this because George Ford is playing out of his skin.
George Ford is amazing.
Farrell is...
injured?
He's one of the best tens in the world and has been for some time.
Right, Lions Tour selection tomorrow. George Ford, Danny Cipriani, neither of them get on the plane.
Interesting.
I would be tempted with Ford. And I was tempted in 2017 with Ford because I really do rate him.
I mean, what he's playing like he is now, there's no question. I mean, there's him and Sippers are like 1A and 1B. I don't... But that's slightly different.
Who is your three for Lions Tour tomorrow? Because Farrell and Sexton are...
Oh, Sexton.
No-brainers.
Farrell, Sexton, bigger.
Finn Russell.
I'd go with those four, and then you've got Farrell as a 12 option.
Yeah. I kind of would weasel out of it and pick the two English lads and...
Which two English lads?
Ford, Sippers and Sexton.
And right. Then have Farrell as a 12.
Yeah, and weasel out of it.
So no like bigger, no bigger, no Finn Russell
as 12.
No, but I would take him as a 12.
No damn bigger in a Lions tour.
I think right, it's very difficult to pick players who aren't playing well at their club. And yeah, he's playing all right, but moving clubs is tricky for anyone, particularly a fly half.
But you're the biggest advocate of damn bigger. The bigger, ignore the small games. The bigger the stage, the bigger the performer.
It's so true, though, isn't it? I mean, we'll have to wait for him in the autumns.
You're tying yourselves up in knots here.
Yeah, I don't know. The answer is I don't know. And the way they're playing,
yeah.
Sippers and Ford are eggs. Now, did anyone pick up on something which Ford said in the pre-match interview with Nick Mullins, the pre-recorded one?
No.
Did you see it?
I watched the game. I didn't watch that piece at the time.
Yeah. No. I think Nick asked him something along the lines of, what's the big difference? Or something like that. And he said, the coach listens. And then he quickly said, not that the others didn't listen, but like, and I thought it was really interesting because part of him playing well, I think, is basically more trust in him and his ability. If you've got a player like that, and that's why Cipriani's doing so well, I think. And he did well at Wasps too, is because they gave him freedom to do things. I think what they were previously asking Ford to do was basically play in some sort of system, and he's not that guy really.
From what I've seen, and I don't watch every Leicester game intently closely, but previously it felt like he was given no freedom to run.
So yeah.
Now he was given the two options, which is immediately pass or kick. Now he's got the third option, which is run, which is one of the things he does best. And when you add that and you've got those three options, he is such a good, intelligent decision maker that I would back him kind of 7-8 times out of 10, which is a very high rate as a 10 to choose the right option.
Well, I mean, how bad would Beauden Barrett be if the only thing he could do is pass the ball? Just still be pretty
stand good. Stand and pass.
Yeah, stand and pass. I mean, he still would be pretty good, actually. But
he'd be pretty good, but you're taking what... create space for others
exactly.
Away from him.
So it's like the old NFL thing, isn't it? You run the ball in order to pass it. Yeah, and that's what fly-halves need to do. They need to have a threat of doing everything.
You need the threat of it, yeah.
Triple threat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And Ford has that.
Well, the third positive out of this game, again, from an England perspective, Nathan Hughes,
very good. Really good game. Really good game.
And am I happy to have him in my fantasy
room? Oh, here we go.
So Nathan Hughes had a very good game. De Jong and Bassett had very good games as well.
De Jong's feet for that try was sensational.
Yeah, that really was.
The most astonishing thing about that whole thing, we've spoke before about the Spencer high tackle and the kind of the implication from that is you're making the game safer because of concussions. De Jong, immediately after scoring that try, went off for a HIA, which he failed.
Did
he? He dotted the ball down. He then got taken off. So he did that.
Was his dive for the try that powerful? That
Well, it's either that or he did that whole thing while
concussed,
which is a...
Do you know what?
Which I think if that is the case, high shots all round. if your guys are running in 40-yard tries, beating four defenders and going under the post while concussed, Maybe we need to do some trials with more concussions.
That's a great idea.
Bearing in mind that there has been incidents of people taking small snippets of our podcast completely out of context, we should probably just point out, Phil was jesting. He's not advocating head injuries.
Well, until the science is proven, Tim, until you can show it's definitely bad, and it did not contribute to De Jong scoring that 40-yard amazing try.
But what
try.
If it did contribute?
Well... Then it's
what,
a trade.
What if you just freed him up? You know, before he had fears, you know, fears and trepidation, quick shots of the head, he's playing nice and freely.
I am, of course, joking.
Oh, do you know who else finds concussion hilarious? Charlie Sharples.
That was very, very funny. But I actually, because I'm jesting, I do think concussion is a very, very serious.
Very serious. Very serious. Very serious.
I do love that he made that joke.
It made me laugh out loud.
I really like that he made it, and I really like that he immediately like corrected himself.
So I can't remember, what did he say? What did Charlie Sharples being interviewed after Gloucester's win?
Yeah, it was a headshot.
Sarah Elgin said something like, so we were surprised to see, amazing to see you scoring two tries, playing so well, especially
after last week.
Last week, and he said, why, what happened last week?
Banter!
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's another case, isn't it? You know, quick shot to the head, two tries.
So
correlation isn't causation.
Yeah, and in all seriousness, so I've not read the full article, but I saw the headline of the Dominic Ryan retirement through concussion.
I'm glad you brought that up. I'd forgotten.
I've not even heard of this.
Dominic Ryan, Leicester, back row, sustained head injury last year and spent the best part of 12 months trying to recover from it. Was unable to and had to retire over the summer, which is exactly the same as Jared Payne, who suffered a head injury on the Lions tour.
Alistair Hargreaves has been another one.
Yeah.
So players react in very different ways. Yeah. And you saw Charlie Sharples last week and thought, oh dear.
Yeah.
But just goes to show.
Hmm. Yeah. So it is very serious business. And it is being looked at in the right way, I think, overall.
And just looping around and not wanting to get bogged down in it, it's why we can all understand the attempt to lower the tackle height.
But absolutely.
Okay. Back to fly halves then.
Yeah.
Do you think Ford is now pole position over Sippers or Sippers over Ford? Or has Sippers just got more work to do because he's not established?
I think Eddie Jones will go. He's got a lot more game tape on Ford. He likes him. He seems to like him a lot more, and he's playing well. And, I think he would go with Ford.
Do you know the other thing about the Fords as well, which it might be something obvious to say, but they actually like rugby, as in they are rugby noses.
Yeah.
So anyone you speak to about George and Joe growing up will just tell you their whole life has been rugby. They love rugby. When you go for a coffee with them, they're talking about rugby. They go for a family meal with their dad and they're talking rugby.
Yeah.
You know, they've got incredibly high rugby IQs.
So what's the implication there when you're in reference to Cipriani?
Well, I guess the implication is, obviously, Cipriani is an amazing player. But I think coaches like guys who absolutely love the game, love talking about it, always enthusiastic. Undoubtedly, Cipriani is those things. But is he at that level that the Fords are?
He's also the last guy to have worn the shirt, and delivered.
And he got a win
with Johnny May, who had a huge part to play in that, but delivered the winning moment in South Africa.
I wonder.
He did
right. If it's not a coincidence that Ford is playing well as Cipriani starts to play well,
so. It's an interesting point because competition for the jersey does push people on.
Yeah.
There's no way you can rest on your laurels.
That's true. However, I don't think you would, exactly like you said, George Ford, well, all their life is rugby. I don't think George Ford or Danny Cipriani need the other person to be motivated. I think it's that spectre of a World Cup a year away. This is a massive season. Look at Henry Slade. I mean, playing out of his skin for Exeter.
He is.
George Ford and Henry Slade have had two amazing weeks.
Yeah, something which I was watching Cipriani do a lot, and I know flyhalves do it all the time now, and it made me think of Slade as well. Off first phase ball, he's not always the flyhalf. So you'll see us all the time. I think Saracens do it quite a lot with Brad Barrett. You know, effectively, that pass from first phase is basically a wasted phase because, well, everyone's lined up.
You pass to a forward.
Yeah.
The forward will have someone coming on a short line and then the 10 out the back.
Yes.
As a very short pass. So the 10 is taking it a little bit deeper, but moving.
Yeah.
And moving wider with then options outside him.
Yeah. So then your 10 can basically set up matchups with, you know, options either side of him, blah, 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 right? So if you've got someone like Slade, who was a fly half to start with, playing at 13, that must be absolutely lethal because you can do that naturally. Does that make sense? Mm.
It does make sense if you're going to use it that way. And it's interesting that Exeter are playing with two kind of ball players in Devoto and Slade, who both played 10.
Yeah, they have. And they're both... Oh, that team is ridiculous now.
That team is amazing.
Exeter had 9 changes.
Yeah.
Two of which were two-thirds of their back row enforced with illness on the day of the game.
Yeah.
To the point where they had a couple of guys who were on loan at Cornish Pirates last year in their back row, and they still, although Sale made it hard work, but they still steamrolled, got another full maximum of 5 points.
They hammered them. Let's not be shy about this.
Well,
it was even
at half time, but anyway, the second half was one. But 9 changes, and you look at the guys that weren't involved in that Exeter side. They mean business.
They've got some serious depth. And depth right across the board as well. Because if you look at those two centres, Slade and Devoto, you could very easily slot in
Hill, Witten
and Campagnaro. And
yeah.
So you've got 5, like, basically close to international caliber.
James Short, okay? Lethal assassin James Short was on the bench for Exeter Braves on Monday.
He's like fifth choice.
But when he plays, he's amazing. And I wonder if he's amazing because he's basically treated like, you know, an Irish international with the amount of game time that he has.
And also, right, Exeter have had some serious injury issues at lock. You know how the orcs are born in Lord of the Rings?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just like out the ground, just pull another one out. That's what they're doing with locks in Devon.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. I just think they're so well coached. I mean, it's the system, it's the coaching, everyone knowing what the absolute basics that they need to do. And trusting them to play as well. I mean, going back to Leicester, I think that's one of the big problems Leicester have, or had under Matt O'Connor, is they didn't trust anyone down into the squad to play. Look at what Jordan Murphy did today with all those young boys.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that.
So, yeah, good.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Fairly regulation win for Exeter at home to Sale.
Yep.
Sale, who put up a decent fight for kind of 60 minutes.
Yeah, it's not enough if you want to finish top four, though, is it?
Well, it's just about that and Allianz are the two hardest places to go.
Yeah.
Sandy Park and Allianz.
I just thought I should mention in the conversation about fly halves, Adam Hastings. Just mention him. As he's totally bossing it at Glasgow. Two man of the match weekends in 2 games. This is after losing Finn Russell.
Yeah.
You sort of think, like, Glasgow... Oh, we're losing Finn Russell and we're getting Adam Hate. We're getting the third or fourth choice Bath fly half.
Well, it just shows, isn't it? It's all about opportunity, you know. And Finn Russell going, obviously, was the end of the world. But it's not really, is it? Because someone else will step up and give them enough game time and they'll be all right. Because that Glasgow team is incredibly well coached. It's great setup.
Great system.
You know,
great
bunch of boys. I actually watched that game. I just remembered now. I watched that game. I came in last night. Rather intoxicated with a chicken burger, and I watched
the whole
of that game.
Is there anything better than watching Glasgow hammer Cheetahs with a chicken burger?
I cannot remember.
And Cheetahs who were winning at half time as well.
I remember it being quite back and forth in the first half.
Yeah, the Cheetahs were 19-14 up at half time.
Mm.
So yeah, another Pro 14. I still want to say Pro 12, even when I've got it in front of me. Another Pro 14 result. Partly because of the team that was put out, Leinster and Dragons, 52-10. And it was not quite a full-strength Leinster team.
It was a good Leinster team.
It was not far off.
No,
it was not far off.
Tasty team, that.
It was very, very close to being absolute full-strength.
They've just got a lot of...
Including Sexton, the Carney boys, Henshaw, Ringrose and Lama in the back line.
Yeah.
Playing Leinster is a little bit like Russian roulette. As in, in the Pro 14, you simply do not know which... Well, it's kind of like playing Russian roulette, except you're always going to get shot.
Yeah.
It's yeah. how powerfully you're going to get shot. I think that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
It does demonstrate, though, like the amount of work that dragons have got to do. Yeah, and they're doing the right things. They're progressing nicely. Well, they're progressing. But so, I mean, everything in that club has to be redone. Like they literally need to rebuild the gym. They literally need to relay the pitch and have somewhere to train. It's not just a case of buying players. The whole thing needs a complete overhaul.
Did you see from that game? I think it's the only highlight I've actually seen. The Jordan Williams try.
Oh my word! What a try!
Jordan Williams
gassed.
Played right.
He played for Bristol last year.
Yes, he did. He was like the great hope for Welsh rugby
because of the 2012 or 13
World Cup.
Under 20s World Cup, where he was just phenomenal. He's had a few years in the wilderness.
I think he was on the books of Merthyr for a few weeks at least.
Yeah.
In fact, he was playing for Merthyr in the Welsh Prem, I believe, until he's picked up by Bristol.
The try he scored. I'll see if I can get it up now.
I've got it here. Oh, no. No, I don't.
Here we go.
It was ridiculous.
Here you go, JB. Let me just wind that back to the start.
Joey Carberry got a try on his first
Make
start for Munster as well.
Yeah.
Starting at fly half.
Here's the try.
Okay.
So that is Dragon's own 10-metre line.
Dragon's a little bit shallow. Nice little step.
Step.
Turns on the gas.
Step.
More feet. More
step.
Gas.
Oh, step
more
again.
Feet. Very nice. Very nice.
And in your pride, Ulsterman, Phil.
Yes.
Three from three.
The only team in the Pro 14 not to have achieved a bonus point.
Well, at least you got 3 from 3.
But 3 from 3, I will take that ahead of bonus points, but not scoring tries. Not scoring tries in the two more difficult games at the start.
Hey, it's...
Okay. But not scoring tries to the Southern Kings, not getting a 4-try bonus point is disappointing.
Yeah, but it's like the striker that's not playing well and still scoring goals.
Yeah, it is like, yeah, a few years ago under Sir Alex Ferguson when United would just continually play terribly but sneak a 1-0 win.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not going to be like that where they pick up any titles. They are going to come undone.
The Pro 14 has had some venture capitalists sniffing around now as well.
Has it?
This week, the
really?
Premiership rejected that initial offer. It could well be subject to more discussions. But now, apparently, there are venture capitalists circling around the Pro 14, quite interested in it.
Mm.
I think what the two of those things might tell us, Premiership and Pro 14, is that there's clearly some value to be made out of these products.
Mm. Completely right.
That isn't being currently made. Whatever you think about the whys and wherefores and
well, I mean, even if you just bought it and sold all of the Irish players to French clubs, you'd probably turn turn a profit.
Just liquidate it.
Yeah, just liquidate the whole thing. Yeah, you'd turn a profit, sure.
I reckon Johnny Sexton was listening to this podcast. Hi, Johnny. Last Monday morning and thought, right, I've had enough of this. Knocked on Leo Cullen's door. Leo, I want to play.
But you know, they did
this. I want to shut these boys up.
So, got to play.
Yeah, a few years ago. It literally was a few years ago. It was Leinster, Munster, like New Year's Day or Boxing Day or something. I sat down to watch it. Like, this is going to be amazing. You know, because it's two amazing teams playing an amazing game. Like,
the crowds will be out.
The crowds are out. Everyone's back home for, for Christmas, blah, 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 blah. And Leinster rock up with a second team. And the people go mental at me because it's not a second team. Look at the internationals. No, if they're not your best players, it's a second team. The week after, they went to Treviso and put out a first team. And I just don't get it.
But it's because they take your beloved Benetton very seriously, Jimmy.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, well, Scarlett's
Zebre this week got the win for Italy. But on that, I suppose you can say Leinster have done so much work with their academy, with their coaching setup, their player pathway development. With players into the first team, that they've earned the right to be able to put out quote unquote a second team, which still goes on and wins anyway.
Yeah, and it's still got dozens, if not hundreds, of international caps in a lot of instances.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, watch out for a lad, by the way, Treviso. Bram Steyn. He's a very, 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 very good South African.
It sounds Italian.
Yeah.
Through and through.
I don't know if he is qualified to play for Italy yet. He might even play.
Tell you who is no Jake Pelledri.
Yes.
Capped by Italy. Now, so quite a few people have said, and in fact, even on our fantasy rugby draft WhatsApp group, it was like, oh, England missed a trick there, not capping
nah,
in.
Not.
But
they did, and they didn't.
Well, they did and they didn't, but Jake Pelledri opted for Italy under 20s, knowing that it was the capture team,
yeah,
and very happy and proud to declare himself Italian. Look,
yeah, Jake Pelledri might go on to win 100 caps for Italy. He's not going to do that for England. He might get 50 caps or 20 caps.
You might get selected. Get a handful, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've got lads like Don Armand who don't get selected.
That's not the point, though, is it? My point was saying he's actually done it
because that's the nation
with a bit of hunger in his heart for it.
Yeah.
Like Lawrence Dellaglio seriously considered playing for Italy because he was very, very proud of his Italian heritage.
Until, you know, I'm doing the many sign with my hands.
No, he's English. That's why he wanted to play for England, because that's his country. But anyway, yeah,
He had a phenomenal game.
He's an absolute animal.
So strong.
I can remember him as a kid. I had a season when I was working in Bristol and I just moved away. I couldn't get back and forth. Where was I? Oh, yeah, I just started teaching in Bristol and I was working. And I went to St Mary's Old Boys Rugby Club where Pete Pelledri, the Bristol legend, was coach.
Yes.
And I can remember his lad. I didn't know he was called Jake, or I just remember him being there on match days quite often in the rugby club. But yeah, he was a kid.
Was he like,
that's
knocking,
when you know
just,
you go
just playing around, accidentally knocks the posts over,
yeah,
run through a brick wall,
yeah,
catches the ball, bursts it,
yeah,
those sort of things.
But he's an animal.
Very good player.
Phenomenal.
Gloucester are in a good place.
And Ludlow looked good as well.
I love Ludlow. I mean, people don't talk about him enough. He's hard. Between the two of them, great balance.
The three of them, and then bring in so Ben Morgan and Freddie Clark, who's another phenomenally strong, absolutely phenomenally strong carrier, Freddie Clark.
Yeah, it doesn't actually seem that bad that they let go Moriarty now.
No.
Because they wanted to keep him.
Yeah.
But I wonder if letting Moriarty go kind of gave him a little bit more cash to get the Sippers on board and all the rest of it.
Creel, yeah. Mostert, who we haven't even seen yet.
Creel, yeah. God.
They're going places. I don't know.
And Charlie Sharple's concussion aiding this or not.
Yes.
The science ultimately will tell, if I have my way. But he's back to his best. I feel like Charlie Sharples has not played this well for 4 or 5 years.
I've had him in my fantasy rugby draft team for the last two seasons. It's much like you with George Floyd. And he's been all right. He's like a 10-point-a-game kind of guy. Now he's turned into a...
Is the difference...
25-30-point-a-game guy.
Not to talk about him again, but is the difference Cipriani?
I think it's more than that. That's a dominant pack.
I think
Rapava Ruskin's fit and playing. They missed him all last season. Fraser Mount Balmain is fit and playing. They missed him all last season. Between those two, they played 7 matches.
Yeah, and Leicester fans really rated Balmain when he was there.
And I think the real thing is Ackerman, who's had a full year
pre-season.
And a full pre-season.
He arrived late last year.
Yeah.
And the players love him. Absolutely.
Yeah, the players love him. He's got all of his systems in place now. He's been given free reign. I mean, just
some
look at
gnarly, nasty
pack.
Guys.
And that
Ed
yeah,
Slater,
that just
Skirbrant, Grobler.
I tell you what, that is
nasty.
That
nasty
is the signing
in a great way.
That is the signing. I mean, there's very rarely win-win signings. But Ed Slater going to Gloucester, Johnny May going to Tigers.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't think
that's a win-win.
Oh no, if you keep Johnny May in that Gloucester team, he's awesome. I'm not saying
he is awesome.
I love Ed Slater,
but Ed Slater's the captain. You know. That he sets the tone. Now, is he as naturally gifted as a rugby player as Johnny May? No, of course he's not. But Johnny May, with all of his talents out wide, is probably not as valuable to Gloucester as Ed Slater setting the tone up front. That's what I would say.
So I can see the win-win argument. So Gloucester would undoubtedly be better if they had Ed Slater and Johnny May.
Yeah, of course they would. But that wasn't on the table.
That was impossible for them to have. And the pack... Gloucester's pack for years and years and years has been amazing on paper, and then you get them out there, and they just don't fit together.
Vickery, Woodman, who's the hooker who's now he's now a coach in France.
Not Yannick Brew.
No. The Argentinian guy. No, was he French?
French. Yannick Brew.
With the goatee beard.
No, where are we thinking
he's a coach
of?
Now.
Yannick. Oh. I know exactly who you mean.
Olivier Azam, there you go. Those kind of cats. And then you had guys like Pete Buxton, just absolute mutes.
Yeah, sorry.
Local bloke, mute. And Alex Brown and Yeah, just some nasty pieces of work. Andy Hazel, Open Sci-Fi. Yeah. So it feels like they've got that real hard edge. And that's a massive part of why Cipriani's playing well and come in and fit in seamlessly. That's a massive part of why Charlie Sharples is getting time and space.
But just to develop my slight point, just one tiny bit more. A lot of chat today was about Skinner. Was it Skinner? Slater? Skinner? Who's the guy starting for? Who got red carded today?
Spencer.
That's the boy. Yeah, gnarly second row. That's what they'd be missing. Well, yeah, you gave him to Gloucester, you know,
to get Johnny May. Admittedly,
yes. So you know, I'm just saying.
Yes.
So good win for Gloucester. Slightly worrying for Bristol. They did some good things early on.
Yeah,
but they big time ran out of steam. Second half.
That is exactly what happened.
Well,
they're just not fit enough to play that way all the time.
Well, yes, exactly. But also, and I don't want to talk it down because I love it so much, the way that Bristol play. But is it also just kamikaze in not a good way?
No, I do think it is actually.
Well, so first half, I think it's really interesting. So first half, Gloucester. When we spoke about this a few weeks ago following the Russell Earnshaw Rugby Dungeon podcast, which is definitely worth going back and listening to, inside your own 22 is a very good place to attack, but not all the time. Because if you do it all the time, so it's good places to attack because the defence aren't expecting it. They've got three men deep.
Yeah,
there is space. So they did it well in the first half. But if that's the only thing you're going to do, you no longer have two wingers back.
Yeah.
There was times in that second half, and the commentators were even referencing it, saying, there's only Woodward back. Everyone is up. Mm. So there is no space, and Gloucester are fully expecting it. And yet Bristol kept banging their head against the door. It's like they weren't recognising it and learning it. It's like they only had one blueprint for how to play, and they'll play it until it kills them, which it did.
Which links to exactly what we were saying earlier about George Ford. Now he seems to have had his running game unleashed.
Yeah.
Defences have to worry about that, which creates more space for Manu, or if they worry too much about Manu, he's going to take advantage of that space. Yeah. It's the same principle, isn't it, with Bristol? Yeah. And their attacking blueprint.
Absolutely, and they need to recognise it. The thing that makes Ford so good is his ability to recognise where the space is and use it. Make the decision and use it. Bristol just did not recognise, and there was times where they were playing 10, 12, 15 phases inside their own 22, and they just eventually ran out of steam and knocked on and turned the ball over, and it's prime
and
attacking
ball. And they tell you what, they don't have the depth on the bench to come on and continue with that quality.
No.
I mean, it's really difficult. That said, I don't believe it's kamikaze, because they're gonna have to do something different. London Irish came up last year and tried to beat teams by being a team just like any other, you know, normal rugby.
No, that's not what happened with London Irish.
Go on.
What happened with London Irish was Tom Coventry came in and tried to say, we're going to play Super Rugby.
Ah, yes, okay.
So
this is three years ago.
3 years ago now. Yeah. So the difference being, he's actually, so Tom Coventry and what Pat Lamb is doing is actually relatively similar in terms of what their initial intention was. Difference being, Tom Coventry did that and thought he could get that happening between June and September. Pat Lamb's had a couple of years now and had a year in the championship of working on this blueprint and this plan. So people are, all right, okay, we know what we're doing. We know how to do it. So that's why it's being more effective than London Irish were. London Irish got it handed to them early. They won that first opening game against Harlequins at Twickenham.
Yeah.
And then they got it handed to them. And then the winter kicked in. And then they tried to change and play a more balanced approach. But the damage had been done.
So just talking to people around that time, actually opposition players who played against London Irish, the feedback was basically the same, which is they kind of ran out of ideas. Like three phases in, like they had the first three phases relatively locked down, and then they'd run out of ideas. I also interviewed Matt Simmons or Simons,
Simmons,
and he was kind of saying that it was good. It was good blueprint. It's not dissimilar to say how Wasps play with you know a lack of structure, but maybe they didn't have the players in place to do it at that time. Or maybe, you know, more to the point, maybe the transition was too great too soon.
Yeah, it was too much. I think Tom Comeridge came in with his coaches from the Highlanders. Where was he? Where did he come from? Sorry, the
Covenanters. No, he came from Chiefs. He was
under Blues. No,
Chiefs. And Chiefs. Yes. What's his name?
Yes, that's right.
Dave Rennie.
Yes. So he came from the Chiefs, and he came with his other coaches from the Chiefs, and straight away they went, "We're changing everything, turning it upside down."
But
and expecting that to work in the, as it was then, Aviva Premiership, straight away, and it doesn't. And I think the difference is where Bristol will pick up wins with this. Is because their home grounds are going to be pretty formidable places to go for any team. And they've been doing it for long enough that actually they're all understand and know the system. It's just the system is flawed
but it
some of the time.
It did win a Pro 14 title. I mean, Scarlets always play nice rugby no matter what. I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but they do always play nice rugby, whether it be Gale Force wins.
But so Scarlets and Connacht, they would have recognised there was times there where they were just being completely suffocated because there's 14 men in the defensive line inside their own 22. That they would not, Scarlets would not try and run it in those situations. They would pick their time.
And Bristol aren't playing Benetton circa 2012.
What? That was a classic year? I think they're going to pick up more wins. And I tell you what else that they do is they make teams make stupid decisions. Bath were basically completely fooled by Bristol opening game. Completely
they
fooled. Gloucester went. Were they drawing or were they behind at half time? I mean, there wasn't much in.
No, not in it.
No, it was very, very close at half time. But
they handed over four kickable penalties. They went for scrums. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I mean, they should be.
One other thing that particularly killed Bristol in this game. So we said New Zealand gave away 3 penalties in their game against South Africa. Bristol gave away 17 against Gloucester, of which 6 were George Smith.
Yeah.
And I've been watching George Smith. So I actually think he's getting hard done by referees.
I said this in week 1.
There was one.
I said that in week 1.
There's been a few. There's a few that are 50-50 calls and they all seem to be going against
him. Is this because they want him to show up at a disciplinary?
Maybe.
It's an incentive.
Maybe.
They want the audience with George Smith.
Yeah, they want an audience, but they want, he's so charismatic. He's so so engaging.
I want to
spend some more time with him.
That will kill. So from one Southern Hemisphere coach.
Oh, sorry.
Who's struggling?
5 points. Oh. If you can tell me where Tom Coventry is coaching, though.
I'm going to guess for the in Waikato at the Mitre 10 side.
Ooh. It probably is Mitre 10. It might be Japan. It might be something like
a school.
Bayon Pro de Deux or something like that.
I can't imagine Tom Coventry's style of rugby going down well at all in Pro de Deux. At all.
No, not at all.
A fascinating experiment. Just teaching a team full of Georgians to play Super Rugby. No, he's actually at New Harbour. So, Tim, you have 3 points for that.
All right, thank you. Well, what about this? Have you seen James O'Connor's very excited about being nearly back fit?
I have seen his rambling Instagram post.
Let me just read one.
His destiny.
James O'Connor says, "Coming to the end of my training camp in Iceland has been a humbling and truly enlightening experience. I've been pushed into some very uncomfortable situations by @SaveYourWorld through the use of sensory deprivation, heat exhaustion and deep states of meditation. My reaction to each stimulus has forced me to face myself and my darkness in a way that I've never felt before. I now know who I was, but more importantly, I now see who I must become. It's time for me to share my truth. I have a deep desire to play for the Wallabies again. I have learnt from my mistakes and I am now ready to bleed green and gold, ready to bleed for my brothers, ready to bleed for the people. I will be back playing in October and I will have my eye firmly on the World Cup. I will not let myself or anyone down again. Time to shine."
Oh my God. So if you read the first part of it, right, before it goes on about the Wallabies, that could be the opening sequence of He-Man. I just I, 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 I,
What to say?
Well, that sounds really positive.
Yeah, no, no, it doesn't.
Well, it sounds like a guy who is trying to take control of things, yeah, and recognises, and everyone, like, he's actually going, basically, that whole sentence could be summarised into, God, I was a bit of a dick. I did some really stupid things. Oh, and no.
The problem is, it's recognising that a bit of a dick in the past.
I'm also, have been.
Oh, yeah,
let's
absolutely.
Not judge. God, I have been.
And I'd
be so off the rails.
And yeah.
So off the rails.
And there's times when all three of us are still dicks right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guilty.
But it's like saying, I know I was a dick in the past, but I'm going to prove to you how much of a dick I'm not now by being an absolute dick.
Yeah. There are different types of dick.
They are. They're very, very different.
So,
but
say,
I genuinely... Yeah. So he is a very, very talented player.
Yes, absolutely.
And
fine athlete.
Some of his best highlights for the Wallabies are amazing.
Do you think he had to go to Iceland because he couldn't swing the rehab trip to Ibiza? Like, no one would possibly believe he's going to rehab in Ibiza, so he's got to go to Iceland.
After 4 days at Ocean Beach Club, drinking Grey Goose from the bottle, I've found what I need to become.
Right, substitute Iceland for Ibiza, and all of a sudden he sounds like an absolute dick again. Like, he's hammered. I don't know what he's doing out there. I've actually met James O'Connor a fair few times at Sale. He's an incredibly nice
guy.
He's
a lovely, charming, really good bloke.
I hope this is just him about to kick on. That's
I think it
say.
Explains his hair growing out though, because I've looked
it's
into
very
this,
long at the moment.
I've looked into the Save Your World. They have lots of products that they sell.
Lots of hair products.
No. So it's health products and motivation for men joining the male revolution.
Stop reading this to me.
Conscious content for the awakening man.
I'm going to tell you right now.
On their website, warrior training for the modern man.
I like James O'Connor an awful lot personally. Please stop reading that because I'm going to stop liking him.
No,
I can't do that.
There's no reason to stop liking him, but I believe...
Warrior training for the modern man!
I believe that the growing the hair has something to do with the hair growing has something to do with the Save Your World process.
Oh. Interesting.
Righto. Okay, well... Yeah,
so
we'll watch this keenly.
So we were talking about two Southern Hemisphere coaches before. Now we've been talking about a Southern Hemisphere potential future player. Let's talk about another Southern Hemisphere coach who has received some stick in the past, but who got a tremendous win this weekend away at Harlequins.
Yes,
Blackadder and Bath.
Absolutely.
Oh. So. I had an inkling after the Bristol loss that there might be something in what Bath are doing. There might be some method in the madness. Establish his power game and then open it up a bit. Got a draw against Gloucester, which, looking back at it, might be a really, really good result.
Towards the end of the season, that might be a very, very good result, yeah.
But I tell you what, towards the end of the season, Bath could be the team to beat. I'm deadly serious. They are so powerful. And I laughed as much as the next person when I found out how much they were going to allegedly pay Joe Cocker-Singer, and B, that they're exchanging Benny Taps for Jamie Roberts.
For the doctor.
I thought, this is insanity. No, I am the one that's insane, because it worked beautifully.
Master plan.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, masterstroke. And to think that they could rest Faletau.
Yeah.
And still put on that kind of show, that kind of performance, in a game that would have been... so perfect for Faletau to be playing the full 80 minutes, and they didn't need him.
No,
that is phenomenal.
And where's Francois Lowe?
He was on the bench for South Africa.
Was he? Well, that's probably why he wasn't involved.
Yeah,
but he wasn't involved when he was actually at Bath. They put him on the bench.
They've got options in that back row.
Goodness me,
lots of options. Underhill, who just
bangs everything.
Yeah, works phenomenally hard. Hits every rook, hits everything moving.
We need to talk about this, though, because you just mentioned Zach Mercer there.
Oh, the step.
I mean, he looks like, he looks like an England number eight of the future, doesn't he? He's
he's getting into that position more and more. And he's still only young, but his try the other day where he carried three men over the line.
The answer's no. Oh, have you seen?
So what I've just shown JB and Phil is the Twitter try celebration videos that a lot of clubs are doing, Bath included. With Zach Mercer's, what type of hat is he wearing? He's pulling a party popper.
Is it a sombrero of some sort?
It does look it looks like a sombrero.
So, not wanting to offend anyone culturally, if that's a different type of hat, but Zach Mercer, for inexplicably, a man of New Zealand and English origin from Yorkshire.
Is he sponsored by like a
Taco
local,
Bell?
Yeah, local
maybe,
Mexican restaurant or something.
Pulling a party popper, wearing a sombrero as his try celebration gift.
Well, have you seen the
Northampton Saints?
Yeah, Saints.
The power tools ones.
Love them. Wacky things to do with a power tool.
Absolutely love them. Yeah. I mean, I would hate to be asked to do that. Yeah. I love how stupid it is.
Dan Biggers is great. He refuses. I love him a little bit more because he refused to do it.
I've seen Ken Owens.
Oh, that's amazing. So, yeah.
On, off.
So, obviously, he's contractually obligated to do one of these. So, he's obviously said, what's the minimum I have to do? They say you have to walk into shot and then walk out of shot. Yeah. And that's all he does. Walks in, stands there for the briefest period with a grumpy face, walks back.
It reminds me of the McDonald's advert for how much work you need to do to buy a double cheeseburger. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, the I think they've all copied Glasgow, haven't they? Didn't they do that first?
Well, I think actually everybody's copying Nottingham Forest Football Club, who were the first to do it, and they do it brilliantly.
Did they?
Yeah. Surely it's an American thing.
I don't know. Well, maybe it is an American thing, but in terms of British sport, Nottingham Forest were the first people to do it, and now everyone's doing
it. Well, it was like the WhatsApp message, wasn't it?
Yeah. Is it starting to jump the shark a little bit, or are you loving it?
I mean, I'm into it because I only noticed them during the A League game or whatever that's called, Premiership Cup or whatever it's called, the other day. Oh, that's interesting. I mean, ridiculous, but interesting.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I quite like it. I quite like seeing these. So, someone who embraces it is Joe Marler. He's very good at that kind of thing. Yeah.
We should do our own gifts, Egg Chasers gifts. What would we use them for? When Benetton win. We should have a JB one.
Benetton or Sale. Ulster,
Benetton or Sale. Ulster. And then I'll have to think of something that I use it for. Maybe when...
You're on TV. The wrist.
The wrist.
Yeah, actually, that's a good shout.
Why don't you do a wrist workout video of you in the in the gym, little wrist flexes.
Wrist curls.
If you've got any ideas...
Oh, my God, that is going to be such a great... we could make it like a two-minute...
Oh,
like
a little
video clip.
spoof documentary.
Yeah,
thing.
Of like how you prepare.
Yeah, like a Rocky training montage.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, just whipping out this mic from its holster. that'd be excellent.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
That's perfect.
Tier 2, tour 3.
We'll work on that. We need to have our... By this time next week, we need to each have our own GIF.
Oh, no.
For something. And if you have any ideas about what that could be for each of us...
Send them in. Yeah. Tweet us. See if you can win a tie.
At Rugby Podcast. We'll give away some ties. We'll give away an Egg Chasers tie if your suggestion ends up being one that we use. Could we get listener gifts in their club shirt?
Ooh.
When there's potentially... I don't know. I'm spitballing here.
Yeah. No, send us your suggestions for the gifts that we should try and do. If we do one, we'll send you a tie. And throw on a hashtag of some description.
The hashtag being
Egg Chaser GIFs. Rugby GIFs. The gift that keeps on gifting. There's loads. You'll work it out.
Cool.
I don't know. So anyway, whatever. Just Bath, tweet at Rugby Podcast.
Bath are looking to me like they could be a top four team. But there again, I think.
They did it at times last year.
Yeah.
But brief moments last
but
year.
This seems to be an upward curve. You know, and a lot of teams are looking substantially better than they did last year. So,
they can't all get in the top four.
Yeah. So on the up, Gloucester, Bath, obviously the two powerhouses which are there.
Leicester. Right now are very much on the
much,
up.
Much better. Northampton will be much better. On the way down, you're probably looking at Wasps slightly. But mind you, they did win today.
They won, and Sopoanga in his first start.
Yeah, he's hit the ground running.
No, I wouldn't put Wasps in that. I think Wasps are just as good as they were last year.
Yeah.
Harlequins, Sale, Worcester, Newcastle on the way down a bit.
Yeah.
Joe Thokonasinghe, talking about people who are on the way up, is the boy. Looked an absolute don in that game, that finish.
He did all right, to be fair to him. Yeah, I thought he was going to take a little bit more time to settle in, but there we go.
You don't need to have the lead in.
Nope.
No, okay, sorry. What I will say to our podcast listeners is there is going to be an amazing little Easter egg on our YouTube channel and anywhere that you see the videos up, because the reason I asked JB about the question about the lead is we just had a little technical issue, which means that you've missed the last 10 minutes of what we were recording.
And it was gold, wasn't it?
Dynamite.
It was. It included pilots in pyjamas.
Yeah.
and recommending extreme levels of alcoholism for Harlequins.
Yeah.
Among...
Pretty much bang on there. Pretty much bang on.
So, but we weren't recording.
We weren't recording.
So go and seek that out, because it's worth it. But do you know what? We should get on to looking at this weekend coming games.
Yes, let's do that.
Absolutely. Right. Pro 14 first.
Do it.
Friday 6:15, an early kickoff because it's in South Africa.
Yeah, good.
Cheetahs host Ulster.
Ulster to win.
Unbeaten Ulster. Cheetahs is a tougher game than the Southern Kings.
Yeah, and I think Cheetahs will win. And Ulster will still be pride of 3 out of 4, but not as pride as they would have been being 4 out of 4.
Mm-hmm.
Give me Ulster. I think they might do this, but only because Cheetahs are struggling a little bit this year. Then on Friday night as well, we've got, which is going to be routine, Cardiff, who have not been playing well at all, hosting Munster.
Next.
Who are playing very, very well.
Joey Carberry, first start for Munster last week, scored a try on debut.
Nice. Your mate Joey Carberry.
Munster, who hammered Ospreys, who we'll come on to in a minute. We've got the other South African game. Glasgow, who hammered Cheetahs, travelled to Southern Kings, who are possibly the weakest team in the league.
Yep. Adam Hastings to boss it again. Third man of the match in a row.
Nice.
And score a lot of points. Then we've got Connacht, Scarlets, which should be interesting.
It will be interesting, Scarlets to edge
away
it.
Win. Dragons, Zebre.
Yep.
Ooh.
Oh, sorry. Zebre to win.
This will be where Dragons get off the mark in ugly fashion, my prediction. Zebre, good win last week.
Great win.
Yeah, Zebre, great win against Cardiff.
Who'd have thought that that the Italians would be the third most successful nation in the Pro 14?
Indeed, who would have thought it? Yeah. Leinster at home to Edinburgh, which is going to be a big home win. And Ospreys, who have just been hammered by Munster, hosting JB's beloved Benetton.
Yeah, Benetton, take them to the woodshed. Give them some 2x4.
They could, you know.
They will. They're a good team.
They could do. I think there will be a backlash from Ospreys.
Doubt it, mate. They've got no backbone. They're weak. Cowards. No, they're not cowards. I just don't know. I just don't think Ospreys are any good. I don't know why you talk about clubs' DNA, and the Ospreys' DNA is they're just not very good. I mean, they can have as many... Even when they were good, they weren't good. Like, do you remember when they had, like... Hook and Henson and you name
Shane Williams, Dan Bigger.
Was Dan Bigger? Probably Dan Bigger was starting then. I mean, because they've been around for so long, and they've had so many Welsh internationals come through, and they've never been any good. The best they've ever been was it a semi or a quarter against Leicester in the Heineken Cup? That's it.
So beloved Benetton to win,
yeah, big time.
On to the Premiership, Friday night up in Newcastle. On the artificial pitch, Exeter are travelling.
Ooh, tasty. They'll have to probably step Jack Noel aside.
They will do, because of his dodgy knees.
But Alex Cuthbert can come in.
Fairly handy replacement.
I can't help but think.
They will get, considering they made 9 changes from last week, they'll probably make another 9, and they'll probably still win. The only question for me is, do they get a 5 try bonus point? Because it's not an easy place to go up to Newcastle.
Yes, they will.
I think they probably will as well.
Weather dependent. There'll be 4 games, 20 points.
Yep.
Saturday, 3:00. We've got Bath hosting Northampton.
Big Bath win, I'm thinking.
Home win. Although
I don't think a big Bath win. Northampton were really abrasive against Saracens. Yeah.
They do have some characters in that team who are, you know, nice and abrasive.
I tell you what, the Piers Francis try, the line he cut for that first try, was spectacular.
He's a very good bellwether to if they're going to be any good.
If he starts playing well,
yeah,
that's an interesting indicator, because none of us particularly rate him. So if Chris Boyd is getting the best out of him,
yeah, exactly,
then he's doing some really good things.
And I would say, I mean, Tamana Harrison and their back row players in general, solid, good players, in fact, very good players. But if Bath just decided, go on, we've got so many amazing number eights, just have one for the day. Take Tulupe Faletau's at Mercer, take him for a ride in your back row, then I think you could be talking
different. They should do the decent thing and like lend them out to a lower league club just to give them some game time.
Well, I think that's what Northampton are short of, and they're not going to be able to solve that problem. They need just one more massive back row ball carrier. Haskell does a lot of good things, but that's not...
Carrying is
not his strength.
No, but he does, yeah.
They're missing that big time. They're missing King Louis.
Yeah.
There you go. So Bath
isn't everyone?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Bath win. It won't be easy because Northampton scored two very good pushover tries against that Saracens back.
Naira Volo on Thokkonen Singer.
Ooh, here we go.
Or on Rocco. That is a meaty match.
It is, isn't it? It really is.
Tasty.
Okay, next one. Sale Wasps. Sale win at home.
Sale without Pfaff. Without Van Rensburg.
Ashton's never played for the club, so we don't need to worry about that.
No,
but they let Haley go because they were getting Ashton.
I think they let Haley go and then they kind of got Ashton by accident, personally. I don't think that was planned. I think Sale can win this.
Oh, I think they can. Of course they can, yeah.
On balance, they probably won't.
Yeah, I'm not sure they will do. I think Wasps away. And the other Saturday kickoff... Yeah. Is Bristol hosting Harlequins.
This is the tastiest one of Saturday matches. Oh, Bristol need this.
They both need this.
They both need this.
Harlequins being... The scoreline was respectable at the end against Bath. It was 32-37. But the game was over after about 50, 60 minutes.
You know, some of the smarter rugby commentators on Twitter have put Harlequins down to struggle. I think they're absolutely right.
Mm.
Yeah, I think
bottom four.
Well, I will just point out that I did a video about Bristol before the season started and said that they're going to be ballers. They're going to go for it, and I think they'll finish 10th.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that. I think they're going to be.
Picking. I can see that. This might be a bellwether. Talk about bellwethers. Yeah. This might be a bellwether for how likely that is.
Do you remember the last time Bristol stayed up after being promoted?
Was that in the Gus P shot and
2008 or something?
Nope. See if you can name the scrum half that.
Hold on. I know Perry. The fly half was Jason Strange. Joe Alab was playing in the back row.
Joe Alab might have been playing. Was it Strange? Because did they come up and not go straight back down with him, or did they stay up? Mm. They stayed up for one season, and then went down the next, right? Can you remember the scrum half?
And Sean Perry.
Sean Perry was the one I was.
And I think I'm right in this. Sean Perry has got the distinction of doing what when he played for England in his first cap? Of being named as what?
Man of the match.
Vice-captain.
Vice-captain?
Really?
I'm pretty sure. You might need to check that.
That's an unbelievable stat to have just... The amount of rugby knowledge and rugby facts, useless, a lot of it, that we have rattling around in our heads.
I'm certain. Maybe check it. Maybe, absolutely check that.
It'd be a difficult thing to check.
Well, I think he's only had like two or three caps.
14 he's listed
and
as.
And do you know what his profession was before professional rugby player? No.
I would go for more manual than that.
Yeah, very manual.
Plumber.
Oh, so close. Welder.
Really?
Welder.
Sean Perry was a welder.
Very good.
Yeah. Who was his number eight at the time?
Dan Ward Smith.
That's the one. Yeah.
I loved that guy.
He was great. A talented player.
Absolutely loved him.
Yeah. He was seriously talented.
Did he go to Wasps? He did, didn't he?
Yeah, he went to Wasps. He should have got an England cap.
Real shame, that. Real shame. knees or something. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So Bristol Harlequins, who's going to win?
Dan Warden Smith's knees aside.
Yeah. If those two can make a difference this week, I'd be. I'm back in Bristol.
Well, we've seen people in the stands getting involved with people on the pitch.
In the Australia.
Oh, we didn't talk about that, did we?
With the Australia game, and so maybe Dan Warden Smith's knees could make an appearance at Ashton Gate. Just
nice.
Trip someone up.
And if they do, who's going to win? Bristol Quins. I'm going for Quins.
I think Quins have got a lot that I like. Bristol have got a lot that I like about them. I think Bristol at home. They were so lucky against Bath, though. They were so jammy.
Yeah.
Everything went their way, and I don't think they're going to be that lucky again. Sir Charles isn't back yet. No, I'm going to go Bristol.
I'm going Bristol.
Quins for me. Then on Sunday, one easy game to predict, one difficult. The easy one, Leicester host Worcester.
Okay.
Which is going to be a 5-try win for Leicester.
Will Spencer be available to play his former team?
Good question.
Rescind it in the George Smith fashion? Or
he's not in there as charismatic
as George Smith. He'll have to take some very good biscuits along.
Incredible biscuits.
Like premium biscuits.
Laced with Rehypnol or something. Something naughty.
Novacek. yeah, I don't know. I mean, I suppose now you've just got to go there and entertain the committee as much as juggle or something. You know, so they forget what they're doing, and then away you go.
The other game, much more difficult. This is a particularly interesting game in the season. Saracens hosting Gloucester.
Brilliant game.
My wrists will be making an appearance at this one.
Nice. Yes. Great game to be working at this.
Golden wrists meet golden wrists, eh? If you get hold of Danny Cipriani.
Well, if he's man of the match at the end and I have to chat to him, that will be a very, very, very good sign for Gloucester.
It would be.
A huge test. This is the test.
Yeah.
Now, Gloucester's pack will fancy themselves against Saracens.
I agree with that.
Yeah,
Mark McCall said at the start of the season that one of the big things they've been working on is their scrum. They were aware that for all the good things, their set piece, the scrum set piece wasn't good enough, and they did get pushed around a bit.
Yeah, so Ackerman will definitely target that.
I think Gloucester will be trumping at the bit for this because it's kind of like a bellwether to how good they're going to be. Whereas Saracens will be looking forward to this because they love big games. I mean, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be absolutely awesome.
And your predictions?
Saracens.
Yeah.
It is near impossible to look past Saracens at home.
I tell you what, I want Gloucester to win.
It'll be very interesting for the league if Gloucester win this.
Yeah. Yeah, two could become three.
I didn't look at this fixture a few weeks ago as being where we are now and looking at it like this.
I tell you what, though, a successful Gloucester would be so cool because, I mean, they travel well anyway. They're a passionate set of supporters to start with. But imagine if they're like top four and, you know, it'd be awesome.
So on that note, one final question to sign off the pod. Is this Gloucester's year?
Oh!
Shh, whisper it. Gloucester's year.
Always next year.
No, it's this year. This is it, boys.
I think three games in.
Yeah.
We cannot say yet that this is going to be Gloucester's year.
No.
It's Gloucester's year. I'm going to say.
Put it on the board.
I'm going to say they're going to be top four. It's going to go on the board.
That's not Gloucester's year.
Well, they need to win the whole thing to be Gloucester's year.
They won the Challenge Cup last year. And,
no, they didn't. They lost it again.
They won it the year before.
They've got a phenomenal record of losing Challenge Cups. Let's get serious about this for a second, right?
Put it on the board.
Because we need to define what Gloucester's year is.
Not winning the league. Gloucester's four isn't top four. Gloucester's year isn't top four.
They've got to win the league next year, then, I think.
Next year.
It's always next year.
Yeah, they can't win it this year.
Next year's Gloucester's year.
Next year. They need to bed down a little bit more.
Yeah.
Who knows?
World Cup year as well, they'll have. Mind you, that'll probably hurt them quite.
It depends how far South Africa get.
Oh, let's not even think about next season. Not think about next season.
There you go, on that bombshell. Let's wrap this up.
How can we get the word bellwether into...
One
more time into the pod. Well...
How long have we been?
Long enough.
1 hour, 37 minutes.
Long enough.
Of pure rugby chat.
Without the pilot, drunkenness, pyjama chat.
I can't believe he had to cut that out. I can't, well.
That's award-winning stuff, that.
That is, isn't it? That's, you know, I mean, that is, that's how you win Sony's. That, or just being lucky enough to be present on air during a disaster. Like, one of the two.
Still not bitter about the fact that we got nominated, mate, last year. I didn't even but I was so scorned by it. I didn't even put an entry in this year.
Yeah, I mean, if only we were there when when the Russians poisoned the spies, or we should have manufactured our own catastrophe, and then we would have won something.
Are you saying that Five Live?
No, I'm not saying that.
No. The one time, so what? If you don't understand what JB's talking about, we were nominated for Best Sports Show at the Audio and Radio Industry Awards last year, and we it seemed like all the awards went to worthy.
Worthiness. Like crying on the couch with sports people. I don't know if that's the official name of the show, but that's what they did.
It's a good show, but yeah, I know what you mean. It felt like that. So, point is, we had a perfect opportunity to have done that, JB.
You should have gone,
only we turned it into a joke when JB got impaled on a tree.
we couldn't stop laughing.
That was our moment to have
damn it!
Cried and won an award.
Oh, if only I could just get him. And I could do myself some serious damage again.
We could have had an appeal, a charity, a new charity with a logo of JB silhouetted upside down on a tree branch.
There's so many. I'm reining it in a little bit because been a little bit knocked around of late on Twitter and by media world in general. So I'm going to dial it in. But there are so many things that I want to say right now about the sort of charity that I want to set up. I can't. I'm going to leave it. And also charities that have already been set up around rugby. Some of them are utterly ridiculous. But anyway, we will do that another time.
Yes.
Let's let everything cool down.
Well, put a pin in that, though, because there will be a time and a place 100% for that, so we will get into it. But as for now, thank you very much for listening, and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.